such staggering peace, such enormous laughter. And I think the reason it speaks to me is that I think it was last weekend, for the first time in a really long time, I just kind of stretched out on the couch with a book. And I realized that was a thing that I had been denying myself during the pandemic for no good reason, right? Like just that ease of being alone with a book, and what a comfort that was to me, and how much I regretted that. And, you know, like, it's funny how when the world is going crazy, we forget to do the basic things that comfort us, right? Like we feel stressed out, and so we don't do the things that help us be less stressed out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you.
So I'm Sarah Briggs. I'm a high school English curriculum facilitator for Gaston County Schools. So I support teachers in grades 9 through 12. And that includes not just English teachers, but all high school teachers. And right now, what's shouting at me is in a million bits and pieces. And that just kind of feels indicative of where we've been, because as I sit at my kitchen table, where I also sat for most of the day, you know, I feel like there's bits and pieces of me everywhere. Across the house, some in my office, because I do spend half time there. And I mean, you know, embodying two roles at one time, a lot of times, sometimes more. Sometimes it's all we can do to just bring the million bits and pieces together onto just one page.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for sharing. Rachel, I don't know if you want to share, or since there's only five of us, we might as well.
I figured you might ask me that, so I was like, let me read the poem right quick.
I guess kind of catch up, because we do have Tika, and please tell me if I say your name incorrectly. I would love for you to correct me if I'm saying it incorrectly. But we just started, and we're just doing a quick welcoming activity. So we're just kind of sharing our names, our roles, the grades that we teach, or the grades we support. And based on this poem, what lines kind of speak to you at this time and why? But while you're thinking, Rachel, you want to go?
I think what speaks to me most, and sorry, I'm not looking at two screens, so it's hard to see, is such and so many blinding bright lights. Because I feel like even though we're reaching 1 year of pandemic teaching and supporting teachers, there's still a lot of stuff being thrown at teachers and folks that support teachers. And sometimes it can become overwhelming. And I also really appreciate what Jen said about, like, when we get stressed out, we don't do those things that like help us be less stressed out. And that's such a good point. Like, to stop these blinding lights, like, I also need to sit down on the couch and read a book. So, and the grades I support are K-5, as I shared at the beginning.
And Tika, I don't know if you're ready to share.
I may have to come back to the last part. I'll just introduce myself for now. My name is Tika Owens. I am here for renewal certification, but traditionally I teach English 9 through 12. And just skimming the poem, I would say the part that speaks to me is the sandstorms and ice blasts, thinking about the weather that's been happening here, you know, between the snow and the rain and the ice. And then today, I'm in Winston-Salem. Today it was almost, 65 degrees. So that speaks to me most immediately.
Thank you for sharing and welcome.
Thank you.
I'm the last one. I'll go ahead. Tika, kind of agree with you. The line that really spoke to me was the one about sandstorms and ice blasts of words, because I feel like so much of what has happened over the past almost year has felt like everybody's just throwing all of these words at you all the time and throwing several things at you to kind of juggle. And sometimes it is hard to find peace with all of that hecticness. But yeah, I also agree with what you were saying, Jennifer, in terms of just finding time to go back to the things that kind of help us decompress. And I cannot tell you the last time I was able to read a book that I wanted to read, not reading a book for you know, professional purposes. So what everyone kind of shared really touches on the idea that I think that words or texts kind of take us to different places or evoke certain emotions. And we know that, you know, the elements of ELA, right? Reading, listening, writing, discussing texts, really allow us to reflect on ourselves or reflect on our small place in a world that has a variety of diverse subjects and people and contexts and worlds that can be explored. And it even provides us with windows into distant places and lives. Or some of you, like Jennifer, had referenced, you know, how text can maybe provide an escape, right? Which all of this is what makes it such an ideal subject to integrate with SEL. So we hope that the resource and examples that we're going to share with you today are going to provide you with some guidance in how to do just that. So you can see how SEL doesn't have to be separate from aligned ELA instruction, but that they can happen together at the same time. So here's our agenda for today. We're going to spend a little bit of time first talking about our why integrate SEL and ELA, and you know why this particularly matters for ELA. And we'll also share a resource that you might already be familiar with that we released, I think, this past summer that provides guidance for integrating SEL into ELA. And then we're going to spend most of our time talking about how you can integrate SEL seamlessly into aligned ELA instruction. And then, of course, we'll make sure to end with some reflection time where we can kind of digest everything that we discussed tonight, as well as address any questions that you might have and share other resources that you may find helpful. So before we jump into the how to integrate SEL and ELA, we want to take a second to talk about why we're here to talk about this subject and why we should even integrate SEL at all in ELA. If you do a quick Google search for SEL activities, much of what you'll find looks like this. Worksheets, checklists, ideas for how to give compliments, graphic organizers on emotions, even behavior charts, right? And it can sometimes be worrisome to see social and emotional learning reduced to inauthentic activities like these. So we want to make sure that we emphasize tonight that just what the title is of this session, right? Teaching SEL entails more than simply teaching kids to be nice or to give a compliment or to list what makes them angry or to try a coping strategy from a list. And it's also definitely not about embarrassing students by placing their name on a behavior chart. So we need to find ways to teach SEL that illustrates to students that feelings are normal, that feelings are natural, without teaching it in isolation from reading and writing and speaking and listening, right? Because we don't teach reading, writing, speaking, and listening in isolation. That doesn't work. And it certainly doesn't work for SEL either. So how do we move SEL instruction from an isolated block of time during the school day in a way so that it becomes part of our regular instruction time? So if you're not familiar with Carol Jago, she's actually, there seems to be a little bit of a lag. I don't know if you can see the quote. Hold on. Nope. My slides are advancing, but they're not advancing on the screen. There we go, okay. So if you're not familiar with Carol Jago, she is a former NCTE president and she's an author of several books on literacy and reading. And she says that ELA teachers have the ideal tool for social and emotional learning, and that's literature. So we have texts to serve as powerful tools for teaching and creating a culture of understanding and celebrating diversity, fostering a sense of belonging, all in a way that kind of just makes it part of regular ELA instruction. So we just want to pause here and just have a little bit of a conversation. In addition to the text that we use, what other natural connections do you see between ELA and SEL?
So Sarah and I kind of had this conversation last week about how SEL is tied into writing in particular, particularly around peer response. Like that's a thing that I'm looking to learn more about is what social and emotional skills we use, but also, I'm thinking a lot about social and emotional skills and particularly peer review and peer writing groups and even, you know, like how we respond to writers as teachers, right? Like how do we give response in a way that is caring?
Yeah, and I've been focusing a little bit more on the literature side and thinking about making sure that each of our curricular units align to at least one of the CASEL framework areas. I've been playing with, that's actually what's behind me tape. This is my kitchen wall, and I had to tape some of the kids' art paper to the wall so I could draw it out. But right now our English 9 units, actually all five, each one hit one of the five CASEL framework areas, and just being more intentional about bringing that to the forefront, that as we talk about characters and conflict, let us also talk about how we handle conflict. As we talk about, you know, a character on a journey of self-discovery and becoming self-aware of their values or their biases, let us also talk about our own. And so, and I think that's, you know, where it connects to the writing piece as well. But just being more intentional about putting those in as skills that students are working on. So as we start to kind of map out units in a different way going forward, I just want to make sure to highlight that.
Definitely. I don't know if you saw in the chat, Sarah, but I really love what you said. And I think that also can easily, the way you kind of set that up can easily be transferred into discussion too, in addition to writing. Tika, I don't know if you want to add anything or...
No, I don't have anything to add at this time. I am very unfamiliar with SEL, so I'm really here to learn and take notes and pay attention. Thank you.
Yeah, of course. So what many of you shared, right, are ideas and connections that you definitely see in the SEL mapping resource that our team created, which Rachel is actually now going to kind of share with you.
So before we look at that SEL and ELA mapping resource that our team created, let's quickly review those CASEL SEL competencies, which will probably be helpful for you as well, Tika, since you're not as familiar with them. So what you see here is the CASEL 5 competencies. We're not going to go into depth explaining and defining each one of them, but we wanted to provide you with a different lens. And so instead of listing out the expectations that align with each of the 5 competencies, we want you all to consider instead giving students questions that they can ask themselves to reflect on how they're applying the SEL competencies in the classroom. So for example, with self-awareness, we would want our students to be reflecting on their strengths and opportunities to grow. For self-management, we want students to be reflecting on their perseverance and their progress towards goals. When we're looking at responsible decision-making, we want to make sure our students are thinking about how they work with others. So these questions can kind of just help our students apply the competencies in any classroom, not just the ELA classroom. But I think as ELA teachers, we have an advantage because we have additional tools to help us teach and reinforce these competencies, as we've just discussed in the previous slide. So on the next slide that we're going to go to, you'll see we're going to talk a little bit about our SEL and ELA mapping document. So what you're looking at on the screen here, which I'm sure most of you are familiar with, is our 12 instructional practices resource. If you, for some reason, aren't familiar, this did come about from the current ELA standard course of study. So these instructional practices, which I'm just going to call them IPs because that's less of a mouthful, are meant to provide a framework for a strongly aligned ELA, for strongly aligned ELA instruction and learning. So these are the actions that we would expect to see if we walk into a classroom where a teacher's teaching standards aligned and rigorous lessons. And in order to better illustrate how SEL can be easily integrated into aligned ELA instruction, this resource connects the SEL competencies to the 12 instructional practices. So now you see a screenshot of the SEL and ELA mapping resource. So let's talk a little bit about the structure of this resource. And I think Stacy just dropped it in the chat, but these are also linked on the slide deck. So if you're looking at our slide deck via the tiny URL, these are both linked there so you can directly navigate to them. But on the top, you'll see a blue heading, and that is going to highlight the specific SEL competency. So in the screenshot that we're looking at, a screenshot of the competency of self-awareness. Then right below that, you're going to find a heading that's like in a light gray. And that is the heading for each of the 12 instructional practices. And then under each of those light gray headings, you'll see guidance and strategies that you can use to integrate that particular SEL competency with each instructional practice. So in this example, in this screenshot, we have the SEL competency of self-awareness. And you would find on this page under the light gray headings under the instructional practices, you would find guidance and strategies that you can use to integrate self-awareness with each of the instructional practices. And then finally on the bottom, which is circled on the screen now, you'll see our ELA anchor standards that are aligned to the guidance and practices found in that particular section. And we have placed these here in order to assist teachers with planning so that you can adapt the bulleted guidance to your own grade level specific standards. So both the instructional practice resource and the SEL mapping resource, again, are linked on your slide deck, which Stacy just dropped the tiny URL if you don't have it. At this point, does anybody have any questions about how the SEL and ELA mapping tool are aligned or are organized, not are aligned, but are organized? Okay, so if we don't have any questions, let's go to the fun part, which is some examples and best practices for how to integrate SEL into your ELA classroom. So we realize that this SEL and ELA mapping document can be pretty long. So what we wanted to do was think through some ways that we can make it more digestible for you and to give you some practices that you could easily implement in your classroom tomorrow if you want to. So we aren't going to discuss, we're going to discuss not only how you can integrate SEL and ELA for each of these five high leverage practices, but we're also going to show you some examples. We have both elementary and secondary examples. And we're going to show you how those integrated practices might look like for each of the SEL competencies. And then we'll also cover some considerations for alignment so that you can be sure that when you're integrating SEL, you're doing it in such a way that's still centered on strongly aligned instruction. So at this point, I'm going to hand it back to Stacy, and she's going to start us off with the high leverage practice of purposeful text selection.
Thank you.
All right. There is a huge lag. I'm so sorry. I don't know why it's taking forever. There we go. Okay, so the first one that we're gonna look at is text selection. So again, in the resource that Rachel shared, you can see guidance for text selection in any of the bullets listed under the instructional practices of 1 and 10 for ideas. But I want us to take a look at this high leverage practice a little more closely. So take a moment to look over these two texts. So you've got The Adventures of Huck Finn and you've got The Absolutely True Diary of a Part-Time Indian. If you're not very familiar with these texts, we've actually linked the images of those texts to outside sources that will provide a summary for you. And I'll drop the links in the chat for you as well. But both of these texts are appropriately complex for middle grades. But what would you say is the difference between the two? So again, you can feel free to type it into the chat if you're more comfortable that way, or if you just want to go ahead and unmute yourself, you can too.
So Huck Finn is hella problematic. Like I've taught it in the past and interrogated it. And I don't, like, I'm not sure that interrogating it is even the right approach, right? Like, I'm not sure that you can. I don't know. I think if I were teaching juniors again, it would go.
Okay.
And I think it's the ending that tips me over into that. Whereas Absolutely True Diary of a Part-Time Indian is absolutely one that I have on my shelves and have no problem recommending to students, even though Sherman Alexie is problematic.
Yes. So then what would you say is really the major difference between the two? You kind of like alluded to it, but you didn't like come right out and say it.
Well, I mean, Huck Finn, the ending of Huck Finn is racist, right? No matter what he's trying to do with the rest of the book. And, no matter the layers that I think that are there with Jim, right? And no matter the fact that we've got an unreliable narrator, that there is no unreliable narrator to excuse the end of the book. The end of the book is straight up racist.
Okay, Melissa's putting in another text suggestion. Yeah, that's great. Does anybody else want to add anything else?
I mean, simplified portrayal. You know, we're talking about which characters are centered, which characters are respected, which characters have a full and complete round portrayal. Just trying to boil it down there, I guess.
Anything else?
Publication date. And I mean, and authorship, you know, Sherman Alexie, you know, despite his personal failings, is a member of the group about which he writes. So I think that is also helpful.
Definitely.
Not just helpful, more than helpful.
Melissa said true, true own voices. Does anybody else want to say anything? So you pretty much hit the nail on the head, right? Both of these texts are grade level texts. Both are coming of age stories that address similar themes revolving around racism, education, guilt, shame, empathy. However, as we kind of just already pointed out, Huck Finn is told from a problematic white male teenager's perspective, where you've got Absolutely True Diary from a Part-Time Indian that's told from the perspective of a Native American male teenager. Sherman Alexie aside, that's what that text perspective is, right? So the whole point that of showing that these two is just to show you that purposefully choosing grade level texts that present diverse perspectives really lends themselves more to SEL integration. And it's not to say that there aren't classics that shouldn't be taught, but what we're saying is that if you choose texts that are diverse in perspectives and experiences, both global and cultural, ethnic, gender, racial, right? This is only going to provide students with more examples of how others experience or how their experiences affect the way that they see the world. So instead of just teaching text from the canon, right, maybe use texts that include different perspectives or even use them together to kind of counter each other's narratives, right, which is very much what like disrupt text is about. So before you even think about selecting text to integrate SEL, first and foremost, you always want to start with making sure texts are first appropriately complex for the grade level that you're teaching, right? Because this is a matter of equity. So to really make sure that your texts are at the appropriate level of complexity for your grade, you need to make sure that you're considering all three measures of text complexity. So you're thinking about quantitative, you're thinking about qualitative measures, and then you're also thinking about reader and task. So the quantitative measure, right, we're most familiar with is Lexile, which is measured by a computer. And I know that several websites already list Lexiles for text, or people use tools like the Lexile Analyzer for Metametrics. But what's important is that you can't just stop examining a text complexity here or just over rely on those Lexile measures. So the other two measures are just as important. So after you determine that Lexile, you should then use your professional judgment to measure the qualitative aspects of the text. So that's where you're looking at structure, right? Because if you have parallel plots or flashbacks or pacing, that's all going to make the structure more complex. You're also going to want to look at language, right? So you're looking at the level of vocabulary. You're looking at if there's any figurative or archaic language that's being used. You're looking at the syntax that may present challenges for students. And then, of course, the levels of meaning that you need to look at. So, you know, does it have several themes? Does it have allegory? Does it have symbolism? All of those things are going to affect a text complexity. And then lastly, of course, you're thinking about the knowledge demands, right? What knowledge students need to have in order to access the text. So after you consider those two measures, you then want to consider the students that are in your classroom. So you're thinking about how the text is going to be read, the tasks that you plan to assign with the text. And then you're also even thinking about, you know, what are your students' reading abilities? What are their interests? What are their motivations? Are you going to read the text out loud? Are they going to read it on their own? Are they going to read it in small groups? That's all going to affect the complexity of the text, because what they do suggest, or researchers suggest, and literacy experts, is that if you're going to do a read aloud, you want to do it with a text that has maybe 1 to 2 grade levels higher complexity, right? So you're thinking about all three of these measures. So one way to kind of illustrate the importance of text complexity, we always mention Knight, right? Knight has a grade 2-3 Lexile, but would you teach it to second and third graders? I see Sarah head shaking and Jennifer's too. Absolutely not, right? It's the qualitative measures that make that text appropriately complex for high school. And the same goes the other way as well, right? Like, so for instance, Charlotte's Web chapter 6 has a Lexile that's appropriate for 8th grade, but would you teach Charlotte's Web to middle schoolers? It's too easy of a text, right? It's those qualitative pieces and those Lexile and the reader and task that kind of all go together. Yes, House on Mango Street is definitely a great example of that. That's a perfect grade 9 text. So once you've kind of determined whether or not the text that you're using is grade level complex, then you can start thinking about, okay, what else does this text need to have? There's another lag, I'm sorry. To make sure that I'm integrating SEL, right? So you've more than likely seen this image before or seen it referenced, right? We want to think about how text can be mirrors, one that promotes self-reflection or self-awareness. And then you might want to think too about how they can be windows, right, into another perspective or another person's shoes. And then of course, sliding glass doors, right? Offering an escape into another world. So after examining text complexity, then think about, you know, do the text that you're choosing, you know, mirror your students' lives? Do they reflect a diverse society? Do they offer a chance to show students how they might be changed by what they're reading? The idea is to offer students the opportunity to imagine a range of possible worlds so that they're better prepared to kind of begin building the ones that they really want to live in. So just some examples, just to show you what it might look like for the competency of social awareness. These are all appropriately complex for the grades that you see there, and they all are selected purposefully to address the SEL competency of social awareness. So you've got what is given from the heart that focuses on understanding and demonstrating empathy and compassion. You've got Roll of Thunder, Hear My Cry, where you're kind of focusing on identifying unjust social norms. And then, of course, I Am Malala, that focuses on other strengths, but also understanding the influences of organizations or systems on individuals. So we just want to pause here and kind of open it up for discussion now. But we want to discuss how you can kind of leverage that purposeful text selection as a way to integrate SEL. So after everything that we've kind of just looked at, how do our text selections communicate our perceptions and our expectations of students?
I mean, I think at the most basic level, we're thinking about showing them potential futures. I just finished a Throughline podcast on Octavia Butler, who is now like at the top of my read next list, because I have not read anything by Octavia Butler. And I know, I'm gonna love it. I know I am, because just hearing about it, but hearing some of the old interviews and her speaking and talking, and she was like, you know, I got there and no one looked like me, but I was, you know, crazy enough not to care. And so just the idea of showing them possible futures. I think the concept, and I like the way that you kind of mentioned this, you know, fiction helps us to create the worlds we want to live in. And that was some of the episode that I listened to, Octavia Butler, is she's not trying to be a prophet. And at the same time, you can't create or go to a world you've never imagined. And so just using that as a tool for exploring, and in her case in particular, science fiction, which I think teenagers are just naturally drawn to anyways, although there has been a penchant for realistic fiction. My last couple years in the classroom, they wanted real things that made them cry. And that was a deficit for me personally, because that's the exact opposite of what I want in like a fun book. So I really had to stretch those couple years. But I think just at some level, helping them to see and imagine futures for themselves is important.
Yeah, absolutely. Does anyone else want to add on?
I think also exploring the past, right? But also, you know, like one of the things that I am realizing about myself that is a shortcoming in the classroom is that there are not enough ways in which we examine what's going on in the present, right? Because it's expensive to bring in contemporary young adult work, right? It's expensive to bring in the books that are going to talk to students about what's going on in their world right now. It's expensive to you know, like to add a collection of poetry every year. But there's just, you know, I'm just realizing that I need to do that more, particularly with regards to my LGBTQ students, which like feels, even though it ought not, it still feels like a risk from where I'm teaching from in rural North Carolina, in rural Eastern North Carolina, I should say.
Yeah, it's certainly like the fact that what are we maybe communicating without communicating it by not amplifying certain voices, right? Does anyone else wanna add anything else? One other thing, Melissa said she's been called evil and Marxist for teaching what she teaches. There are things I would say personally to that, but I'm not going to. I think one thing I was going to say in terms of, you know, our text selections and communicating our perceptions and expectations is definitely also making sure that you are giving students an opportunity to read those grade level texts. I think so many times we have students that come to us with vastly different needs, and we kind of try to manage that challenge by providing them texts that they can easily read on their own and not necessarily providing them with that challenge. But then we don't realize that, you know, we're kind of perpetuating an opportunity gap when we're not providing them the opportunity to read those challenging texts. And I think that itself also kind of communicates what we think they can do and what we think that they're capable of. So that's why it's important. We wanted to make sure we bring up the text complexity piece, because that's just as important as purposefully selecting them to kind of focus on the SEL competency that, you know, you want students to learn about. So I'm actually gonna stop talking now and let Rachel kind of dive into the next high leverage practice.
All right, so our next high leverage practice is text sets, which you all are probably already very familiar with and use in your classroom often. So if you wanna look at the guidance that we have in our mapping document, you can find that for any competency listed under instructional practice 4 or 10. So on the next slide, we have an example of a text set for third grade. And I know that I think we only have high school teachers on here tonight. So please bear with my elementary examples.
But that's okay. They're recording it and there might be an elementary teacher looking at this.
Perfect. So during last school year, we discussed that text sets are a great way for not only providing aligned instruction, but also for supporting struggling readers, right? This is a great way to scaffold. And that's because obviously, as you all know, that text sets are purposefully sequenced, right? They are sequenced in such a way that is going to allow our students to build the vocabulary and the knowledge that they need. That's going to prepare them to access that most complex text, which we're usually putting at the end of our set. So in this third grade example, you can see that we have texts 1 through 3, and they're sequenced in such a way that's going to help the students better understand the anchor text, The Day You Begin, which if you haven't read that book, it's amazing. And so when we look at this text set, what do you notice? And how do you see it as integration of SEL? So what do you notice about this text set and how does it integrate SEL?
Well, it's got lots of positive self-talk.
Yes. A mix of text types, lots of positive self-talk.
Yeah, and your essential question is an I or a you question. So like students are putting themselves into the question, which means as they read, they're investigating a question about themselves.
Right. So also, everything.
Oh, yes, to children's books in high school. Yes.
Yes.
There are Peter Reynolds books, more than one, in the unit guides that I put out. Like, here's a link to an approved read aloud, an endorsed read aloud, or visit your librarian. And we've got a couple of media specialists in high schools who have started picture book collections.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I used to teach Gilgamesh, like, by supplementing what was in the textbook with children's books, with picture books.
There are some beautiful ones. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Have any of you all read The Day You Begin?
No. Not yet.
Check it out. It is amazing. And it's great for promoting the competency of self-awareness because it's all about identity. And it's a really great book for having your students start to reflect and become more aware of themselves. So just like what you all said, we've created in this text set, it's when we create our text sets, it's really easy for us to integrate our SEL because we can make our essential question around whatever competency we're trying to focus on, right? So in this, for this text set, we're focusing on the competency of self-awareness. And so each of the texts in this set are providing our kids with the opportunity to better understand how things like culture and language and personal values affect their identity, which of course is part of building that self-awareness. And then I think as Melissa brought up, there's also multiple perspectives represented in each of the texts and it's presented in multiple genres and formats as well. So these are a great way to integrate SEL and align ELA instruction seamlessly. On the next slide, we're going to talk a little bit about some considerations for alignment. So just like Stacy talked about in terms of text selection, we start to think about how we can integrate SEL into our text sets. And when we do that, we want to, of course, make sure that we are starting with the alignment to our grade level standards. So we want to make sure that we're doing that text selection piece that Stacy was talking about and that the texts that we're selecting are appropriately complex for our grade level and are applied to the grade level standards. And then you want to think about the standards that these texts can help you address. So this is one of my favorite reasons to use text sets. It's because you can address so many standards when you are using text sets. So in the example we just covered, as you see listed here in the bullets, we're having students evaluate content in diverse formats and genres, just like what Melissa brought up. We have an article, we have a poem, we have a novel. And a lot of times in text sets, you also see videos and pictures incorporated as well. You can even incorporate things like podcasts. So you have that flexibility to incorporate a wide range of genres and formats. And then also gathering information from multiple sources. So you have lots of sources that students can look at when completing the culminating tasks that you're asking them to do. You're also integrating and analyzing two or more texts on the same topic. All these texts revolved around the concept of identity. And then of course, all of our texts included were grade level complex texts that help students build knowledge as they moved through the text set. And so when we're moving into the considerations for SEL integration, after we've made sure that our text set is aligned, one way we can be sure that we're seamlessly integrating SEL is that we're including multiple perspectives, which we've done in this text set. So there's several different perspectives on self-awareness that were represented. Living with conformity, self-image, which is the reflection in me, is a lot about self-image. Alienation and self-reliance in Julia Moves to the United States. There isn't just one perspective that's being examined. So when you're integrating SEL through text sets, it's important that you're going to expose your students to several different perspectives so that they can then in turn reflect on their own perspectives and start to build that self-awareness, which will then also promote their social awareness, which is another competency. So as we discussed earlier, make sure that your text sets are meaningfully connected to the SEL competencies that you want to teach and that you want to focus your instruction on, which in this case were identity and self-awareness. And then on the next slide, we have another example of a text set for the secondary grade levels. So this text set includes texts that are not only grade level appropriate for 11th or 12th grade, but they're also intentionally sequenced, like we talked about, to support that understanding of the most complex texts. And they also focus on a different competency you see at the top here, responsible decision making. And we are focusing on how we want our students to focus on how our moral standards impact the choices that we make. So again, it's like, it's one of those you questions. Our students can think about that and how their moral standards impact their own choices, right? And we are helping them explore that through the text that we've chosen. So on our next slide, we're going to take a minute to discuss. So after what I've kind of covered here, how can text sets help students to develop a growth mindset and or tolerance?
While you're thinking, Rachel, I'm so sorry if the texts are advancing before you're even ready. It's just that, like, there's so much of a lag that I try to click beforehand and then it ends up.
No, you're good. I'm just going with the flow.
Well, I mean, I think especially when you're presenting lots of different perspectives, it's going to help students realize that there are many perspectives. So I haven't taught juniors in years and years and years, and yet somehow like my experience teaching juniors is super relevant tonight. But, you know, like with the Crucible and the Blacklist and all that, a colleague of mine, the last time I taught juniors, said, you know, on the waterfront, like, that's about that. And you know that Elia Kazan and Arthur Miller were both having affairs with Marilyn Monroe at the same time, and she chose Miller. And I was like, oh, like, all of a sudden, the Crucible makes so much more sense. Like, once you know, like, on the waterfront is an answer to it. And that he modeled Abigail after Marilyn Monroe. And there, like, there was a video that she had, and I can't remember where it was from, but that went into, like, the relationship between, like, the three of them, right? That, like, so she's, like, kind of torn between the, I don't know, it was fascinating. Especially if you, like, you know, are fascinated by Marilyn Monroe. But what I was getting at was that, like the Blacklist is a thing that we all feel like we know exactly, right? And I can remember when Elia Kazan got the honorary Oscar, people were still not, you know, like, they were not willing to honor him because he had spoken to the House Un-American Activities Committee. And so to be able to look at his perspective and on the waterfront and kind of compare and contrast it with Arthur Miller's kind of shows you, like, that yes, like, to us now, it looks like what Elia Kazan did was absolutely wrong, but you can understand a little bit better from looking at that and the art that he made to explain. I don't know how to explain it. I'm not doing a very good job. I'm rambling.
Okay, it's also 7:52 at night.
Yeah, but you know, like it's more complex than sometimes we like to reduce it down to.
Yeah, and to go a little bit different of a direction, I was thinking too about, you know, tolerance. We have the opportunity to expose students to people, cultures, worlds that they may not be exposed to yet. And so, you know, if they live in a community that has no Middle Eastern people who live in that community, I'm thinking, Jen, especially you in a little bit more rural setting, you know, we have the opportunity to introduce them to those people, to those worlds, to those beliefs, and build up the tolerance before they're confronted with it. They have a safe environment and opportunity to kind of interrogate, well, what does that mean about me? What does this mean about our world? What does this mean about their belief system? And to reflect that all culture is equally valuable. And just because you grew up in one doesn't mean that somebody else grew up in a wrong one. So just having an opportunity for that. I think about Things Fall Apart. It is not one of my favorite things to teach by any means, but it is a way to talk to students about how do you end up not liking the people who look like you? How does the author do that? And how does this story, you know, change your perspective of this historical event? So I do think it provides a good window into that, and allows them to really interrogate some of their own, just what they bring every day to school and what they will bring to future interactions and relationships, and anticipate that before they even have the opportunity to meet or engage or, you know, have a conflict or whatever.
Yeah, Sarah, that's such a great point. And text sets are a great way to do that, because you can bring in those multiple perspectives. Kind of what Melissa was brought up in the chat too. Like, we want to make sure that we're not just using one author to stand up for the whole group. And I know that, I think they changed their name now, but Teaching Tolerance actually has some really good text sets around these topics of like stereotypes. I used one in my classroom when I was teaching seventh grade, shortly after 9/11, when there was a lot of issues around stereotyping in the Muslim community. And so that would be a good resource to check out as well. But all of those points that you all have brought up are great. It's a great, text sets are a great way to bring in multiple perspectives, and also to not make sure that you are giving aligned instruction when you're choosing those appropriately complex texts, but also doing so in a way that's going to support your students that struggle with the more complex texts as well. So now I'm going to turn it back over to Stacy to talk about writing.
One other thing too, that I just want to piggyback on what Rachel was just saying, like, text sets can do so many things. Like Rachel just said, like, they're just great for instruction in general, and they're great for supporting your struggling learners. And I think that growth mindset is so important, because the way that those texts are sequenced really helps kind of your students with that staircase of complexity. So they kind of feel like, okay, I can do this. And then you give them the next one that might be a little more challenging, and they are able to read that, and then they get to move on to the next one. So I think that definitely helps as well. So let's talk about writing. Again, and if you look in the resource under any of those IPs, you will find several guidance tips and ideas for writing tasks. But we're gonna just kind of look at what this might look like. If my slide will advance. There we go. Okay, or not. Okay, there we go. So take a second to look over this writing task. So you've got the text over to the right, and then you've got the prompt over to the left. Does this writing task integrate ELA and SEL? And if so, how? And if not, why?
Yeah, I forgot to mute myself last time. I'm sorry, y'all. I think it's like a self-awareness thing, right? Like this is an area in which students aren't necessarily aware of the ways in which they are putting themselves out there to the world, particularly on the internet. I've had similar discussions with my students around Google, right? School systems across the state use Google apps, and a lot of them use first name, last name as students' email addresses, which means that Google is straight up tracking them, and not just tracking them anonymously, but tracking them by name, starting when they get that Gmail address. You know, like that's not a thing that they even think about, because like Google is just like, it's what we use for school. Sorry, no.
Okay. Does anyone else want to add anything to that? Before we,
I was thinking about decision making, responsible decision making, learning how to make informed decisions. And of course, that falls within our standards when we start talking about how to source reliable information, how to evaluate an argument, a counter argument, parallel reading. Yes. Yes, I think it was a trick question. I'm with Melissa.
No, we promised we weren't trying to trick anybody. But yeah, you're absolutely right. It does integrate SEL. And honestly, when we were putting this together, I wasn't even thinking about the ones that you brought up, which, I mean, they all really do tie nice and easily together. When I was putting this one together, I was thinking about social awareness, only because if you look at this task, right, at first glance, it doesn't seem like it integrates SEL. But they're investigating one, different points of views, but they're investigating different points of views on ethical and social norms, right? Or how organizations or systems can kind of influence behavior. And they're doing this all while writing about the texts that were intentionally selected for SEL integration. So one thing I want to show you too is really another example, but also kind of considerations for alignment when you're using writing to integrate SEL. So if you look at this writing task, or actually there are two writing tasks there, what we really kind of wanted to show you was that you can easily use evidence-based writing tasks to connect to the reading that students are doing. And also, of course, like bringing in your reading standards, your language standards, or you can make sure to align them to the text types, right? So you're thinking about standards 1, 2, and 3 for writing. So you can see that those two example tasks align to the writing standards that are noted there. And they also connect to the text that's being read in class, which was a text that was purposely chosen to integrate SEL as well. So if you're using evidence-based writing and you're really grounding them in those texts, then of course, that's a really great way to integrate SEL into your writing. So it's okay, writing with one hand, completely understand. So kind of coming back to this, looking at it from a writing lens, you know, if you think about evidence-based writing, we just talked about how the texts that you select are going to be the anchor or the driver for your students' writing. So you want to make sure to remember the considerations that we talked about earlier for text selection and for text sets. And then, of course, when you're integrating SEL into aligned writing tasks, you can also select mentor texts that kind of serve as those springboards or writing inspiration for exploring SEL competencies or concepts. And then lastly, you could also select mentor texts that students can kind of mimic the author's approaches, right? Or use them as stepping stones, not only with exploring writer's craft and structure, but even with exploring social and emotional topics. So the idea with writing tasks that integrate SEL is really just to offer students the opportunity to explore their own social and emotional well-being, as well as the social and emotional well-being of others. So here's another elementary example of an evidence-based writing task, and you can see how the text selected for this writing task really focuses on the competency of self-awareness and the concept of growth mindset. And then the writing task, of course, is aligned specifically to some of the reading standards, and they have to return to the text to answer that first question. But the writing task also then invites them to kind of take it a step further by asking them to connect it to their own feelings and their own thoughts, right? So same thing that you should think about when you're using writing to integrate SEL. So again, we want to pause here and just kind of discuss this question. Thinking about what we talked about with writing, how can writing provide students a safe place to kind of explore scary things?
With the reading, they can explore things through characters. They can use those plot events, those characters, you know, to say, well, if they had done this, this could have happened. Or, you know, I wonder what it would have been like if her childhood would have been better, or if, you know, this thing hadn't have happened to her. So they've got a place to explore that either for themselves or for someone else they know, or for their future selves, or just their curious selves. I mean, kids are curious and they wonder about what other people go through and what their experiences are. So that, I mean, that would be one way, using the stories to kind of write into that.
Absolutely. I like how you brought it back to that text selection. So Melissa said, mentor text mimicking, especially if poems can help students put their feelings into words in ways they maybe wouldn't think of to do on their own. Yeah, definitely. A way for them to discover themselves in their writing. Narrative nonfiction is a great genre to play with. Yes, it definitely is. Anything else that anyone wants to add before we move on to vocabulary? All right, Rachel, take it away.
All right, so for vocabulary integration, again, we have the IPs listed on the slide. So if you're interested in seeing how you can integrate SEL into vocabulary instruction, you can take a look at any of those instructional practices within the SEL and ELA mapping. But let's look at an example. So one way that we can integrate SEL into vocabulary instruction is by incorporating work around the emotion vocabulary words. When we're choosing those words to teach, we want to make sure that we are spending time teaching tier two words or academic vocabulary, since these are the words that our students are going to encounter across content areas. And most of the time, a lot of the time these words are coming from word families. And so learning about word families also is going to help them identify new words that they may encounter that are unknown to them. So on this screen, we have an appropriately complex text for first grade. I want you to look at the words in black. And which of the words in black do you think are tier two? And which do you think are considered emotional or SEL vocabulary? So which ones are just those emotion / SEL vocabulary words, and which ones are our tier two words?
I would say embarrassed would probably be a tier two for the younger ones. I don't know about arguing, like certain, the different connotations of arguing would sure be, put it into kind of that tier two category.
Right. Sarah says embarrassed is the longest. And I know this is first grade. So Stacey, if you can click, we've actually color coded them for you. So you're right. There we go. So the red words are just the emotion vocabulary words. They're not tier two words. The purple words are your tier two words or your academic vocabulary words. Do you notice anything else about the purple words? I feel like such an elementary teacher now. Do you notice anything about the purple words?
They all have suffixes.
They're participles.
Oh, Lord.
Participles. Yes. Yes, I love you, Jen.
Also correct, but from my elementary perspective, they are also emotion words, right? These are all emotion words. So when we're talking about integration of SEL, we also have selected tier two words that are also emotion words. So this particular excerpt of a text, which is from a book that's available on Epic. So it's also a really good picture book to use as well, if you want to check it out at some point. This text addresses a lot of the components of relationship skills. And so teaching the words that we've color coded can kind of help students start to identify and describe their own feelings and emotions that they have when they're thinking about how to maintain positive relationships and how they interact with others and how they can effectively communicate. And of course, this would be extremely easy to do for any of the other competencies as well. So on the next slide, we're going to talk about some considerations for alignment. So when we're talking about what we need to consider when we're using vocabulary to integrate SEL into our aligned instruction, as I mentioned earlier, the first thing we want to do in order to maintain that alignment to the standards is that you want to be sure that you're selecting the best words to teach, which are going to be your tier two words, your academic vocabulary words. Let's quickly review our tiered vocabulary. So our tier one words are everyday words, right? We're not going to teach these in class. These are our most basic words of oral language. Our tier three words are domain specific. So they're typically going to be specific to a field of study, occupations, geographic regions, specific content area. When we learn these words, we're usually learning them in our content area classes, and they're most easily taught in the context of the lesson or the content being studied. So these are words like in the ELA classroom, like personification and onomatopoeia. When we're thinking about the social studies classroom, things like Revolutionary War or economics. Our tier two words are usually important for reading comprehension because they contain multiple meanings and they appear in all sorts of texts and they occur across context or across content areas. So words like measure. So when we're talking about the word measure in ELA, that means something completely different than when we're talking about measure in math, right? Because measure in ELA, we're talking about something related to poetry. In math, we're talking about measuring something. Same thing with the tier two word structure. You might discuss cause and effect structure in the ELA classroom, but the structure of government in social studies or the structure of an atom in the science classroom is going to be completely different. So that's why it's really important that we're focusing on spending time on those tier two words so that we can help our students decipher the meaning of the words in future texts that they'll read. It's also important, which I think I mentioned this before, that we're exposing our students to tier two words because they're more abstract and they belong to word families. So knowing how a word is somehow related to another word is going to help them, help our students to break down meanings of unknown words in other texts that they'll read. So you may be able to identify when you're integrating SEL, tier two words that are also emotion vocabulary words that help students to kind of name their emotions, but that might not always be the case. You may find that you're gonna have to address tier two words as well as emotion vocabulary, but you can do them at the same time within the same lesson. So let's look at an example with this same text that we did at the for the first example with some text-dependent questions. So this is the same excerpt as before from my friend. The red words are your emotion words and your purple words are tier two and emotion words. So in a single lesson, let's say that when you're close reading, you're gonna be able to address both types of vocabulary with the text dependent question that you design. And of course this can be done for any grade level with any text for any SEL competency. So during a discussion or writing activity, you might first bring students' attention to the emotion vocabulary words to provide an easy access point to the text by asking a text dependent question. So let's pull up the first text dependent question that we have. So it says, what words or phrases from the story let you know how the characters feel? So what words or phrases can you identify in this excerpt that lets you know how the characters feel?
Sorry, all the ones that are highlighted.
Right, all the ones that are highlighted.
And then mad?
Yeah, I pulled that phrase out as well, like getting mad. My father gets mad, my mother gets mad. Did anybody notice anything else?
I would say understand and polite too.
Yeah. So there are some words and phrases in the excerpt that we haven't highlighted as well. Yeah, and noise as well, because these are all words and phrases that highlight how the characters feel. And so this is a good access point to begin our discussion. And then we can move on to our tier two words, which are those words in purple. Since this is a first grade standard, we can, our first grade babies are still learning how to read. So we can bring in our reading foundation standards to teach these tier two words and talk about inflectional endings, the ED and the ING. And so the next question is, which of the words have inflectional endings? And then you can discuss about how the inflectional endings change the meaning of the word. So for example, you can ask your students, how does the ED at the end of embarrass change the meaning? So not only are you teaching those tier two vocabulary words, but you're also bringing in a reading foundation standard and talking about applying word analysis skills to decoding and determining the meaning of tier two words, which is going to help your students better understand the meaning of other words with inflectional endings. So then from here, you may choose to do more work with other tier two words, which we address. There's one more question. Yep, there it is. So like you see it with this question here in pink, this last question, not only are we still doing work with our tier two and emotion vocab, but we're also asking our students to connect reading and writing or reading and discussion if they're not yet at that point where they can produce writing. And it's all centered on the SEL competency that you wanna focus on. So here we're talking about relationship skills. And we have a similar example of this hidden on the next slide. So you can see that in your slide deck. And it's a secondary example, but we want to look at a different example with another competency. So we will go ahead and go to that one. So this is another example of how we can integrate SEL into the vocabulary instruction, specifically focusing on word parts and morphology. So as we mentioned before, it's important to teach these word parts, these word families, and the morphology of words. Obviously because our standards require it, but also because knowledge of word parts and word families are gonna help our kids figure out the meaning of unknown words that they encounter in other texts. So in this example, we're focusing on the competency of self-management, and we're explicitly teaching the meaning of the suffix ITY by asking students to determine the meaning of adversity. So after we have determined the meaning of adversity and talked about the meaning of the suffix, we're gonna ask students to come up with a list of other words that contain that same suffix to describe someone that overcomes adversity. So this is something that could be adapted to any competency, and you could do it to teach a variety of prefixes and suffixes that are related to that competency, or even that are related to if you're doing like a character analysis, you could identify a characteristic of that character and have students come up with a list based on one characteristic that you determine, like that character overcame adversity. So what are some other characteristics that with that same suffix that we can use to describe that character that we're reading about?
No worries, Melissa. Thanks for joining us.
And so just to wrap up this section, based on what we've talked about, and the examples that we've shown you, what ways can vocabulary instruction help students with self-regulation? Giving them language to express their feelings, yes.
Yeah, that's kind of where my brain was too. You know, and again, using our text to allow them to do that, anticipate it, or, you know, reflect on their own past, doesn't just have to be about what they're experiencing today. So, you know, I've seen the mood meters are fantastic. And especially those that have such a broad range of different adjectives to describe emotions. I think it's really helpful. I appreciate the inclusion of morphology. I've got to do more thinking on that. I know that it is good. I know that it is right. I also know I didn't do it very well in the classroom. And I want to be able to support teachers to do that piece better. So thanks for getting me thinking on that.
Valerie does. Talk to Valerie Person.
Okay.
Because she does amazing work around morphology. She like, this was like my first couple of years of teaching. Like she was telling me about like this Dr. Seuss thing that she was doing around morphology with her students, and like just made up words, but mm-hmm. depending on like what article you had in front of them or like the ending of it, like the kids could play, like we made up a go fish game, mm-hmm. but she does amazing things with it. So yes, talk to Valerie. She knows good stuff about morphology.
And Sarah, I have, I've been working with some of the educators in juvenile justice, and we've been kind of focusing on like adolescent literacy practices. On one of mm-hmm. them is around vocabulary and morphology and syntax. So if you email me, otherwise I will forget, I can send you that PowerPoint if you want to use it.
Yes. And that's where my brain is in particular, especially with teaching basically foundational reading skills to students sitting in our high schools. So students who arrive to us as low readers or even non-readers, and how our regular education teachers can be a support for that and have it be a part of daily instruction to support that. So
yes, and I have a PowerPoint on word recognition and fluency for secondary too.
So yes, I will definitely take that. Yes, yes, okay. Word parts, fluency, yes.
Does anybody else play the New York Times like crossword puzzle app? Anybody do that? Okay, so I'm the only like spelling bee addict here. They have like this game, it's on the app. I don't know if it's on the website. Well, no, I do know that it's on the website because you can't play it fully on the website. But like basically they give you a whole bunch of letters and you have to try and make as many words as possible out of the 7 letters that they give you, and they rank you like you're doing great, or like the one that I very rarely get is genius. Like you can get up to genius level, and I try real hard every day, but I don't necessarily get there. Well, so root words are great for that, right? Like it's a like I like it because it's like an everyday like you figure out, you know, like which roots you can make with those letters. And then you play with like the permutations, kind of like listing the endings, right? The words that can mm-hmm. end with itty or city.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Also a really great way for secondary students who are struggling with word recognition, and like if you want to bring in like phonic support and phonemic mm-hmm. awareness support, then you can definitely incorporate that. Just making sure that, of course, you don't have the text in front of them because it is just, you know, oral and auditory. Mm-hmm. But you can simply just say, okay, well, like what word, if you change the first sound of dream to what word do you get from there? Like, that's a really great support to do that. So what you just said, Jennifer, reminds me of like that kind of work that you can do with your secondary students for sure.
Could you play Upwards? Do you guys remember that game?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, what you are describing sounds like, is it Boggle?
Yeah. No, it's not Boggle. It's I really think it was called Upwards, where like,
there's one of those too.
Only mm-hmm. you could go up. Mm-hmm. I think Boggle is the one where you like press the thing and it gives you like
a set of letters. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think any of those wordplay things, and that was all I ever got to as a teacher. And I'm trying to figure out a way to, I don't know, maybe it's not important for it to be so structured. For it to be so planned, but just supporting them in thinking about where does this fit, where can I do it intentionally and be intentional about including some of those foundational reading skills. I mean, syllable types is just still foreign to high school folk. And I think it's going to continue to be that way for a long, long time. So, and giving just, them something to reference.
I would, Sarah, just caution. I would just make sure that if you have students that are secondary students that are reading at a grade three or above, you really aren't going to be providing them those reading foundational skills support. Like, you will maybe do a little bit with phonics and phonemic awareness mm-hmm. and fluency and word recognition, but not much. Like, all those other reading foundational skills are really going to be for like intensive interventions for students who are
deaf. Yeah, that's where we had MTSS team earlier today. So that is where my brain is. Yes. Yeah. But, I'm at tier three right now.
But again, definitely too, like, if you email me, even if you want to, you can just send me some times you want to meet, and we can actually even go through the slide deck together if you want to mm-hmm. then take it and use it with your teachers.
Cool. Yeah, that'd be awesome. Thank you.
Speaking of vocabulary, the series of unfortunate events books are great for teaching vocabulary, right? Like, that's what they do. Mm-hmm. Like, they take those tier two words and they explain them. Like, there's a, which in this context means this, right? And, you know, like, one of my students who was kind of a reluctant reader just ate those up because it was right when the TV show was coming on Netflix. And so, like, and he liked the TV show. And so he was reading the books to, you know, like, find out what happened. And it was like, it was a big kind of growth moment for him. He basically went from reading comic books exclusively to devouring these, you know, like, yes, for younger readers, but with tons of vocabulary and jokes about Google. So, I don't know. I love those books.
I'm looking at the time here. I'm sorry. I don't mean to.
We do. I was going to say, I'm going to have to go do bedtime.
Yeah, we have one more thing to go through, but really it's collaboration, which, you know, is probably the easiest high leverage practice to do. And it's really because basically if you're teaching speaking and listening standard one and you're having students take part of the writing process, then you, if you're aligning to those standards, then you are integrating SEL. So this is just one of the standards we just kind of bolded for you, like the things that students are doing. If you're aligning to the standard, they're automatically integrating SEL, right? And then we do have some protocols and stuff in there for you as well that you might want to use with your students. They're really just good protocols in general, but they definitely also help with integrating SEL. So we're gonna skip the discussion question because of time. And we're just gonna skip to the optimistic closure, if that's all right. Rachel?
Yeah, that's fine. Our optimistic closure, we wanted to do something a little bit different. And so we looked through CASEL's three signature practices playbook. And so there's four questions, and I'm going to wait till they pop up. And Stacy, drop the playbook into the chat, y'all. It's like almost my bedtime. So let's look at these four questions. So the first is, what have you learned that you plan to apply to your future practice? What message of encouragement do you want to send yourself? Number three, what do you want to remember from today's session? And number four, what reminders about how you're feeling right now do you want to send to your future self? I was going to give you a couple minutes to reflect, but I know people have to put kids to bed and I have to go to bed too. I'm just playing. But if you could, maybe if you feel comfortable, just unmute yourself and share something, a reflection from one of these questions.
Sarah, I think we all know that I'm going to talk forever, so you go ahead.
I mean, the one thing I wrote down is the work that I've been doing like this week. I've been in curriculum planning mode about redesigning, about reinvigorating. And so, you know, I'm just thinking really deliberately about text sets, again, making sure our essential questions support those standards, but a variety of the CASEL framework standards. So, you know, that English 10 with World Lit isn't living only in social identity, and does branch out into some other things. Also thinking about, right now we've got a set up by genre, but it's not intentionally structured in a sequence. And so just considering that level of support also, to support teachers in selecting a sequence and being intentional about that sequence. So that, I mean, that's what's weighing on my mind currently.
Yeah, I like being more intentional about vocabulary is definitely mm-hmm. on my list. But I also, Sarah, I think I'm going to steal your, like, the mapping that you're doing with the CASEL competencies and the units. Which, like, in terms of reflection, like, I think that's super, that would be super valuable for me.
And I think students could do this, like, in a classroom like yours, where you've got that level of relationship with your kiddos, you know, co-construct those questions that you want to investigate, co-construct your text set. I mean, that's the holy grail right there. Say, like, here's the competencies. We need to do these things. What do you want to read about to get there?
They drive me nuts because, like, we kind of did that today with the perfect storm. Like, in wrapping up the book, like, we talked about what went well and what didn't. Mm-hmm. And they're, they're voicing their frustrations with it, right? Which is, like, well, the plot kind of goes like it goes up to a climax and then it dips really low and then there's another climax and then it dips. And I'm like, you guys, like, you're complaining about it, but you're totally noticing that the structure of the plot is a wave, which is absolutely like, and not a thing that I would have noticed on my own. So tell me again how we don't need to read this book ever again. Like, yep. But yeah, okay, that's a good place to stop talking.
No, we are happy that you all, this has made you think about some ways that you can be more intentional and integrating not just one competency and bringing in those diverse perspectives, and also thinking about, like, how you can integrate SEL with your vocabulary instruction. So we hope that you'll continue to reflect on that too and go back and kind of look through this and explore it with your own teachers, with your colleagues as well. We have some resources too. They're all linked. The ones on the left are mostly our standards aligned resources. And then the ones on the right are both instructional and SEL related. Our mapping resource is there. And then also there's the SEL course for educators. And Stacy's also provided the links to the CASEL website and playbook if you need that. I think Stacy also dropped our evaluation in the chat too, if you could complete that for us so that we can continue to improve this, because like Stacy said, we haven't done this for many people yet. So we'd love to know how we could make it better and how we could reach more people with the examples that we're providing as well. So I don't know, Stacy, do you have anything else to add?
Nope, I think you covered it.
Well, you all know Stacy, but our contact information is here if you need it. And please feel free to reach out to Stacy, who is your Rachel. If you need reading foundational stuff, okay. You can reach out to me or my colleague Mary. She's amazing. But both of us would be happy to talk about any thing in terms of reading foundation. And I'm also the upper elementary too. So if you have any colleagues that have upper elementary questions, I'm your girl. But other
I definitely want to know more about like the elementary text that you're using, right? The mm-hmm. picture books. Because there were two of those that I already have in my Amazon like cart.
Yes. So. Yeah, I can give you a lot of suggestions. I love, yeah, I have some great ones.